Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hey, guy, Mitch.
Good. Yep.
Oh, sounds really convincing. It's very well lit in this room today. Normally we have it a little bit like a bit too more romantic.
I've got these flying saucers above my head. You know what I mean? Oh, that's better, isn't it?
That's actually fully dark now.
No, I kind of like that. That was actually quite romantic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very much. So have you got a song to start
us
off?
I was just thinking about that that song the other day. I'm losing it. But it starts off with the Cypress Hill song, you know, where it's like... When the shit goes down, you better be ready. When the shit goes down. Remember Cypress Hill song?
No, I don't.
Well, that takes me back to the end of my lunacy drug taking days when Cypress Hill were just putting that stuff out.
And yeah.
I was listening to that song, Losing It, the other day on the YouTube, and the song started with that, but it was Coachella. Have you seen the fucking amount of people that go to Coachella?
Yeah,
a lot. Oh my God, it's got to be like 100,000. What the fuck are you saying to me? Not anymore. But it's got to be like 100,000 people to 150,000 people at that event. The speaker setup was just insane. Like, it was just...
They have to be for those big events. I know this is off topic, but
we're going to get there. But how the hell did they set up those speakers? It was like, it came over like a wave over the whole crowd. So the roof was speakers, and then it was just like 150,000 people.
You've never been... Have you ever been to one of those big...
Sorry, what's that? Is that the last Coachella group? There was 40 people there, was it? What is that? 250,000 people at Coachella. I can't see that. Wow. Each Coachella stage from 2013 to 2015 set new records for the festival attendance, goers, reviews. In 2017, the festival was attended by 250,000 people and grossed 114.6 million dollars. Jeepers, creepers! That's a lot.
You've never been to one of those big events, though.
Not that size. No.
You used to warehouse raves.
Yeah.
Because Tomorrowland was really big. That was really good. But I was talking to someone the other day. Like I said, it's a bit off topic because we weren't going to talk about this today. But how, like, the state of the times that we live in now. That you know, that whole festival thing. You know, well, it's just going to change form a little bit, perhaps. You know,
in terms of that, I like, how are you going to stop the NRL?
Oh, do you remember
how are you going to stop? You know.
NRL. What's that got to do with it?
Well, it has, because you've massive crowds. And
you're talking about
the Super Bowl. Yeah, Super Bowl and NRL, but you're also talking college football in America. That scene is colossal. That is a colossal movement and scene. You're not going to stop that. So
people
I think
gathering together. Yeah, well, they've done it already in China. Yeah. And you remember when we were in India and we're at the Holi festival, and they, apparently everybody had said that the government said we're not supposed to do Holi this year because of. And Robin was saying to us, no,
it's
India. It's going to happen.
Everything
in rave in the square.
Yeah, it was huge. But he was saying to me, like, there's 100,000 people move into Pushkar for Holi.
Yeah.
He said
there was
every
not
street,
as many.
Like,
there
wasn't
year.
That. It was probably about 20,000. But every street, he said, is just full of people from all over the country.
It's actually probably not a bad thing that it was not as busy.
Yeah. Well, we had
because it was quite lovely. It was busy, but not
wasn't so bad.
Insane,
you know. Yeah, we were taken care of when we were there, but I loved it. But I wanted to talk about this Netflix documentary.
Netflix. Okay, so can we just talk about Netflix for a second before we go on?
Netflix itself.
So I've cancelled my Netflix subscription,
right?
Because of there was a bit of controversy going around about the
little cuties.
Yeah, the show that they'd done, and
just based on their thoughtless response to it as well.
I think that's part of what it was. I think it was an artsy film, and it was designed to be an artsy film that you might normally – we had this discussion the other day with some of the girls that you might expect to see on SBS or something like that, you know, this film. But they – really, to me, it was I'm very much you know, when it comes to kids and when it comes to protecting kids and keeping them kids and, you know, being age appropriate with kids, I think it's important. And they created this show, and it was about the coming of age of this girl and showing that, you know, she was – the idea was that she left this conservative family, started twerking in a dance group, and then ends up coming back to the family. And it was supposed to show the fact that she's, you know, going back to being a girl again.
Right.
But in the meantime, the way I – what I don't like about it is that they used the little girls, they were like 11, to dance very provocatively. Mm. And there was just a lot of stuff in there that I felt was inappropriate. And then when Netflix – how Netflix responded I felt was inappropriate. And for that reason I thought, well – what's more important to me is it like well, you know how you're talking about, you know, you talk about the Coca-Cola thing, you know, you need these big companies because they help, you know, but if you tell them what you want by where you spend your money, that's what they'll have to do. Do you know what I mean? And I felt like I didn't want to spend my money and do that to support that, you know.
Well, you don't need to. There's so many other options
as well now,
And the problem is the bigger these companies get, the less of a conscience they have.
Yeah, I think.
And they really, you know, they really – I mean, I think – I don't know what the figures is. I'll get – if you can just find out what the figures were attached. But I think they lost something like $9 billion.
Yeah, they lost a bit of money in
But $9 billion is nothing. I said it to two of my mates. I was at netball the other day and I said, did you see that controversy around them?
That's shiny.
And they were like, no, didn't know anything about it. I'm like, no, dude, fucking check it out. I mean, don't let your kids watch it. I mean, and the problem is it's getting more and more that way, you know. And I think we spoke about it on one of the other podcasts, but I went to see The Secret Garden on Sunday and I loved it. It was a great movie, right?
Yeah, it's an old – that's it's a new version of an old
– of an old, old movie. But isn't it fucking insane how every kid's movie starts with a kid – that has lost their parents.
Mm. All the Disney ones.
Like, it's fucking, it's crazy. Even like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, like, and some of the Indiana, you know, the little boy that's in Indiana Jones, he's lost his parents.
Right.
It's funny how they, like every one of them, I was literally going to put it out on my page and say, look, can somebody tell me a Disney movie that doesn't start that way?
Mm.
Because I don't know of any that don't start that way. Do you know what I mean?
Have that happen in there somewhere, yeah.
And I don't know what it is, because if you even look at Star Wars, you know, it starts off that the kid has no father and mother and he's living with the uncle. The Wizard of Oz, she has no kid, parents. She's living with her aunt and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get my head. I don't understand whether, and you know, it's, wouldn't it be great if you could have a conversation with the guy who wrote The Hero's Journey? Joseph Campbell, and ask the question, why is it that these movies all start this way? Mm-hmm. Is it a formula? You know, is there some sort of formula that hooks, that they use as a hook, you know, to hook people in or hook the kid in.
Maybe.
Hey, you know, what's going to happen to this kid? He's downtrodden. It's like they're meeting them at the bottom of their life or in a real pit, and then how they come out of it, you know, and how they use it. And I just, it's, I'm really, really quite intrigued to see how that is.
Do you know, I was just thinking Inside Out, she doesn't lose a parent. The girl, they move locations, but she doesn't lose a parent.
Right, right, right. Well, there you go.
That's Pixar, I don't think. Is that Disney?
Well, Pixar is now owned by Disney, isn't it?
I don't know. Anyway, so just back to this, though.
Yeah.
The thing I think that was frustrating for me is that I think that these conversations that people have about, you know, the kids and stuff like that was important, like in terms of I think it was trying to start a conversation about children and having them grow up too early, and I think those conversations are important. But you can, to me, you can share that without showing that.
Yeah.
And I feel like they exploited kids to say they shouldn't exploit kids. Like there were 650 kids auditioned for that. And it's on a platform where there are bound to be people that are watching it just because they're 11-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And to me, that's it just wasn't acceptable.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the reason we were talking about that is because everyone had talked to me about The Social Dilemma. A lot of people had said, watch The Social Dilemma. So I cancelled my Netflix subscription and then I had maybe 3 days before it actually cancelled.
So you could watch it.
So I ended up watching it on the last night. And I wanted to talk about it because I thought it was very interesting. And like, we're not the experts on this stuff, but I think that it's important to have a conversation and it's important to open the conversation about the impact of social media and the impact of not just social media, everything, all the technology on where we're at. And something that I think is important to know is technology is neither plus nor minus. You know, a water bottle is not plus or minus. A house is not nothing's plus or minus.
Yeah.
It's the way what we do with it and how we use it that makes it plus or minus.
Well, I mean, the other thing as well, right, is that if you look at anything that's new and brought to the market, right, let's say the aeroplane, it took them years before they perfected it and got it right. And, you know, they were fucking super dangerous. You know, they were, you know, they fell out of the sky all the time and they moved towards some sense of correcting it so that people could be safe in its use.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they sent a police, set of policing bodies. I mean, you just have to go to, you know, Foxtel and look at how many documentaries there are, Discovery, many documentaries there are on crashed planes and how they police it and work out how, who died, who's responsible, blah, blah, blah. And companies are held responsible. But, and I like, it, over time, eventually there's a policing occurs and companies are held responsible. With any invention, it's the same with the cars. You know, cars were super dangerous. They would catch fire. They'd blow up. They were fucking unsafe. You know, people would fall out of them. And over time, they're policed until such a time that they're safe for the user. But I think with social media, it has happened so fast and so quick. And there is no governing body. I mean, we had a conversation with Dave Logan a couple of years ago, and he was talking about that there's zero policing of artificial intelligence.
Mm.
And in the documentary, you know, they're talking about artificial intelligence. They're talking about, you know, Terminator, you know, in the future, Terminator is going to take over an artificial intelligence. They're like, no. We're that horse is well past the gate. That has left the gate.
Mm.
That has already happened. So, you know, the artificial intelligence is in control of everything. They're not able to control AI. They're not able to control social media. They're able to manipulate it, but they have no control over it. And I was like, holy shit. And that's very, very true. So then it has to, you know, the other thing that I loved about it was the start. They said, okay, you are the product. Now, you'd said it to me about 2 days earlier, and I'm like, how does that work? I am the product. You are the product. And so people who, the people who are looking, you know, you and me, anybody who's on social media is the product.
Well, one of the quotes in it said something like, if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product.
Yeah.
And that means that because we're not paying for it. It's free. Comes on, you know, on our phone.
But it's not free.
Well, it's not free. Nothing's free. Yeah. But if you're not paying for it, then you are the product.
Yeah.
And so basically, it was talking about the fact that their intention is to keep you online for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because then
they can sell to you.
They can sell to you. You know, you're well.
But also, yes, they can sell to you. I'd agree.
But if you're the product, then you can be sold too.
Yeah, but it was also then where they were talking about the fact that these companies have lost their ethics and are not being policed because they've started to ask questions. Okay, how do we get into the psychology of them, you the product, you know? And in some cases, they were showing images of primal man. Because they're saying, you know, technology is moving at an exponential rate, you know, increasing in trillions fold. But our brains are not, you know, and you got all these tech people who are super geniuses, plus all their technology behind a glass screen that looks so innocent to you, but is actually hacking into your brain and trying to find ways to hack into your brain that you're not conscious of. You've no idea that they're doing this.
Yeah.
But they are constantly working out how do we keep them on the screen, how do we then manipulate them into buying products, into spending time on here, into spending money, how do we get them to do this? So now, like, I thought about the analogy of the fact that your phone is actually a fucking supermarket. Now, do you remember we were on a ship, right? And at one point I'm looking around and I'm thinking, like, the whole thing was just a marketing exercise. While you were on the ship, you were just being sold to every minute. Like, every minute they were trying to sell something to you, right? And it's like this plastic world, you know, this plastic fabricated world that if this sign doesn't work and doesn't produce a dollar amount within a day, it's down and there's another one up. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they're just constantly trying to work out how do we hack into the primal part of their brain and hack, you know, how do we push their needs against them, their emotional lack against them, and then fill that need by saying, hey, I understand that you feel lonely here, but if you jump on here, you know, what's her name has got a photograph of you that you're shared with, and now you're going to feel important. And so it then becomes psychologically the part of you that makes you feel comfortable and wanted and warm. But it's done it in a way, like when we were on that ship, I'm looking around, I go, this is everything that is fucking wrong with the world, man. Like if you look here, this is how you fucking don't want the world to turn out. But unfortunately, it is turning out. And people were like zombies walking around, putting their hand in their pocket and just buying shit. Yeah. And then it goes back to these companies who are behind all this, like these tech companies. Like, how much money do they fucking want? Like, how much is enough? You know, like, and who's got all the money? And what are they doing with all the money? And why do you need all the money? And it's like, why do you need it? As I was watching the doco, I was thinking, like, what's the purpose? Is it, who's got the biggest set of balls? Like, who has the biggest amount of money is the fucking winner? I just don't get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it does. But I think it's not about the money. It comes a point where it's not about the money anymore. It's about the power.
Mm.
And I think that's what's important. And I think, I don't disagree with what you've said, but I don't think it's fully on the mark. Because if we're the product, then we're the ones being sold. We're not the ones being sold to.
Yeah.
We're the ones being sold.
Yeah.
The fact that
our data, our movements, yes, our thoughts, our attention,
our actions, our everything that we do is sold to somebody who's going to buy, you know.
Who'll pay a certain amount of money to advertise with us.
Yeah. And I mean, if we're really honest, we're a part of that because we advertise on Facebook.
Yeah.
So we're taking the consumer's attention away. Now, for us, in our intention is that we're helping people, right? Yeah. And to, as an individual company, our motto is to live life inspired, everything to live life inspired. So we're going to do whatever we can to help people to do that, right? Yeah. But we're using this as a tool to help to get to that point. Yeah. And these social media companies have basically, because they have the data, we pay them to help us access some of that data, right?
Yeah.
And I think that
because do you remember we're in the process of building an app, right? And we were having a conversation with our builder, and we were like, "So how do we monetize this app?" And he said, "The way you'll monetize this app is through selling the data, like selling the information." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah." He said, "That's where it's all at now." He said, and this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's where it's all at, Mitch. He said, it's not about advertising something on there. He said, it's about selling the behavior of the client to big tech companies and to people who want to be able to then market to the consumer through the data you're able to supply to them. And I was like, fuck no, that's, is that really how you do it? You know, because you got to keep this stuff. I mean, our objective is anonymity, you know, keep people's information anonymous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I was I was shocked. I was like, fuck, is that how they're doing it? And then to watch this documentary and see how big that industry is, you know.
And that's what, so basically what they're doing is, and this is something that I've obviously, I've spoken to you about, it's not obvious to anybody else, but, you know, as a result of what they were talking about, he was giving the example of real world examples. You know, if you haven't been online for a certain amount of time, it's like you're prompted to get back online. You're prompted to get back to that place, you know. And when I first set up my Facebook, I set it up to have notifications. So you get notified when you tag, you get notified when you, if somebody comments on the post, you get notified for whatever reason, you know. And then I was realizing after I watched that, because this is one of the things they said at the end. He said, you know, what can you do? It's not realistic to say that you'll be off social media, but the truth about it is that you can determine, like at the moment, it is getting determined for us where we put our attention. And I think that is where we can take back some of the power. Because at the moment, how they discuss it is if you've not been if you've not been around for a while, they will ping you basically and say, look at this here. Have a look over here. This is a bright, shiny object here, and you look over here instead of looking over. I'm using hand functions. We're on audio; nobody's going to see that. But you know, you look over here onto your social, and when you look onto your social, then I've got your attention instead of bringing your attention back into the real world, right? So one of the things that I think we can take back in this is to determine when, like. Determine when we use these things. You know, we can determine when we are on Facebook. We can determine when we're paying attention to our own lives. So one of the things I've personally done is I've taken off all the notifications. So I don't get notified about anything until I'm in the app. And that's me making a choice to go into the app. Now, I think it's a bit of a delusion to say that it's also a choice, to be honest, because at the end of the day, there's an addiction mechanism there. You know, there's an addiction, like we're all addicted in some way or another, right? We've all got addictions. But the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of addictions you have. And if my addiction is that I'm going to spend my time on Facebook or I'm going to get distracted by Facebook, then it's not really a choice. It's an addiction. It's me allowing, it's the habit that's taking me back there. Do you know what I mean? Even though I'm saying it's a choice to look into the app, but so many people don't have the app and they're living just fine as they are. Do you know what I mean? I think the one thing I can do for myself is to actually just take away the notifications. We were talking to one of the guys here at work yesterday, and she was saying that she mutes all her notifications about everything. That includes WhatsApp. And that means that she doesn't go to WhatsApp unless, and, you know, we've got like about 50 WhatsApp. I've got one for the family. I've got one for the MJB team. I've got three Social or four media, or five different types of things. Groups. And so you're getting buzzed all the time. So that's the next thing I'm going to do. I just haven't got around to it, but I'm going to mute my my WhatsApp as well, because
when WhatsApp came out, I was like, how are those guys monetizing things? Like, how would WhatsApp be monetizing things? But what they're doing is they're selling the behavior of the groups that you set up, and then they sell that behavior and say, okay, well, they're in these groups, so then market to them on their Facebook page things that are associated with these groups, which is like,
I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yes. That's what they're doing. They're selling the data of your behavior.
How do they know? So what do you mean? Just like the name, types of groups you're in?
Yes. Yeah. So they monitor the behavior. But also, they're monitoring your texts. They're monitoring what you're discussing and what you're communicating about. Like, I can guarantee you, even with what they show in that documentary, you're only seeing the surface.
Oh, part of it, yeah.
But, I mean, the other thing that was cool about the documentary was the credibility of the people that they interviewed. Holy shit.
Well,
like,
I think,
and they were getting on there going, you know, like, my kids don't have any screens. We don't give our kids screen time. There's no screen. There's no phones. My kids do not wake up and have phones. They don't have them on Saturdays. And one of the things that he said as well, I can't remember the chap's name. You can find out for us, Tash, the red-haired chap. And then what he was for, I think he was one of the original engineers of Facebook. Anyway, he was saying, like, years ago with cartoons, there were regulatory bodies that said within this time period in the Saturday morning, they are not allowed to advertise these products to sell to children.
That's right. I remember that now.
And he said now they don't have that. Now, if I think
you can go onto YouTube at any time.
Now, if I think about my kids and I look at my kids, what I'm seeing is, his name is Tristan Harris.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, people can watch the documentary.
Anyway, Tristan Harris, really, really cool guy. So he basically is, you know, he's probably the most featured throughout the whole doco. But some of the guys got on there right at the beginning. You could see they were frightened. They had to speak to their lawyers backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards before they would get on the documentary to talk about what was going on. And like one of the things, I know it's a quick sidestep, but one of the things they said was, you know, at the beginning, you know, we wanted to change the world. We wanted to be able to make a difference. But he said, that's all lost now. That's not what it's about anymore. Now it's about shareholders getting paid.
I make a quick sidestep as well though?
Yeah.
Just quickly, in terms of the fact that, you know, the types of people that they, whoever did the documentary also has a purpose for doing
an agenda.
An agenda. So we're taking that on board. 100%.
Everybody has an agenda. But he, when I heard that, I thought, my kids sit on the couch on a Saturday morning and they watch people playing games, right? And I'd go down and I'd be like, girls, you got 10 more minutes. Now, when I got to take that off them, emotionally, their addiction, they kick up. You know, they get mad. They slam doors. They, you know, and I'm thinking, Jesus, this is because they're getting a hit through watching this stuff. You know, 10-minute clips of these guys playing Minecraft. It's like, and I'm like, the amount of people that I've sat in front of that have said, you know, we got a problem with addiction of Minecraft in the household at home. And I'm thinking, you know, this is my kids as well. So I've after watching it last night, I sat down with Ange and I said, look, we have to do something because this is insane. You know, one of the guys, the chap with the dreadlocks who wrote the book, Tash will get it for us in a second because I want to get the name of the book right. But he said at the end, look, he said, I love all these people in Silicon Valley. They're all my friends. They're all buddies. You know, they all started off with the best of intentions. And when you think about it, you know, Bucky Fuller was part of the creation of Silicon Valley. He was one of the guys that was around when that stuff was happening. And his name is Jaron Lanier, is that chap's name. But he said, what's the name of the book, Tash? Just call it out to me in a sec. He was the one that said look, take the screens down, put them away. He said, I don't want to hurt my friends, but he said, I'm telling you that it's a problem. Right now, it's a problem. Will it sort itself out? I think in some way it's going to have to, because someone's going to have to come in and police it, because it is getting out of control. The other thing was then, he said, look outside the window. He said, it's beautiful out there. It's green out there. And then afterwards, I was looking at Angie. We were looking at each other going, Jesus. And we're at fault as well. You know, I'm at fault as well. I would go to bed with my phone next to me. And I convince myself that I'm doing it because I need a clock to know what time it is in the morning. But the truth about it is I have the sharpest fucking alarm clock inside of my head. I wake up at 6 a.m. every morning. Every morning, yeah. I wake up. See, I can literally, it's sharp, 6 a.m. sharp. So in actual fact, the reason I have that phone next to me is not that. I use the excuse of that, but it's not that. And I, you know, I would go to bed watching, say to myself, I'll watch a Netflix doco just to calm my brain down so I can sleep. Which is insane.
I don't know how you did that.
You know, and then I wake up and the first thing I do is I go to YouTube and I'll play, you know, something from Mystery History, or I'll play something from Gaia or something like that while I'm making breakfast and getting everything ready. And then Lexi would come out and I'd be like, hi Lex, morning Lex, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, that's because I'm not connecting with her. That's because I'm not. So I'm like, no, I don't pick the phone up from now on until 9 a.m. And when I go to bed, the phone goes off at 6 o'clock in the evening, and then I'm not touching the phone anymore. No matter how much it bings, no matter what it does, I'm not touching the phone anymore.
Mm.
And then I've said to the girls this morning, I said, you can watch a movie in the morning on a Saturday morning, because I mean, everybody, you watch movies with your kids on a Saturday morning. And I said, I'm going to give you a small amount of time of screen time. I'll probably give you 30 minutes of screen time, then the phones go away. And what I want to do in the next month is get rid of the phones altogether. If I can get away, because we're going camping, kids are off school next week. If I can get away from the phones altogether within that time period, then I'm going to keep away from it.
Okay, so the book is called 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a good point about the kids, because I love when the kids stay over at my house, you know, and Lexi stayed over a few times, as you know. But the last time, for whatever reason, I don't know if she'd just started Minecraft, she wanted her phone with her, and I said, okay, but it's only on, I think it was only on the next morning she could have it for a bit, right? And Lexi and I have a great time when she comes over. We just have the best conversations. We have a laugh, you know. We sit on the balcony and just discuss life and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the one time she brought her phone with her,
yeah,
it was like you could feel like she just wanted to get to the phone and she wasn't. She just wasn't connecting. And that's not her. That's not her responsibility. That's my responsibility as the one that was, you know, taking care of her at that time,
yeah,
to either not have brought it or to just to do something differently. My cousin, her little boy, is two.
Yeah.
And he loves tractors and trucks and all this stuff, you know. But if you show him that on a screen – and you take it away from him, doesn't matter how long he's been on the screen, whether it's a minute or five minutes, he loses it afterwards. because I think it's because of the addictive nature. He's almost three, but it's the addictive nature.
But then you have to think about this, you know. They have spent billions of dollars working out how to do that, how to hack the audience, right? And they have, like, they have, there's no...
Well, I think you're right. There's no governing body.
No, but it's not even that. There's no moral or ethical. There's nobody sitting around going, yeah, but...
Well, there's and no one what, governing
what about,
that.
What about the kids? You know, because if we're doing it to an adult, then we're doing it to a kid. Mm. They're sitting there going... No, let's fucking do it to the kids.
Well, the thing is that our and like it's easy to say that it's the tech companies doing it, but we got sucked into it.
Yeah,
we're the ones that are stropping everything at a notification. Like my mum, I love my mum to pieces, but she's you're the representation of my mum now. She will literally stop everything. Like she'll be in the middle of a conversation with you, but she'll stop everything if her phone buzzes because. Mm. It's like she's got this new thing and then she needs to pay attention to that, you know. And it's – so us as adults, I do the same thing. And I've been known to do the same thing. Sometimes I feel like I'm not as addicted to my phone as other people might be. Mm. But then you take – somebody takes my phone away or I accidentally leave it at home for the day and I'm like, fucking hell, like, you know, I haven't got my phone. Mm. What's my – where's my go-to? So we're very, very, very attached. And those attachments that we have are now impacting the kids.
Well, I think the other thing is, in terms of those attachments, right, is that we come from an era where we knew what it was like not to have those attachments.
Yeah.
Now you got kids that don't know what it's like not to have those attachments. Mm. You got 12, 10, 11, 12-year-olds that have never experienced what it is to not have technology.
Mm.
They've never had. They were never raised in an era where there was no screen.
Mm.
You know, which is fucking terrifying.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't know that it's terrifying in a full sense of the word, because there's benefits and drawbacks. This is why I said right at the start, everybody in a new era says that technology is more minus than plus or plus than minus. It's not. It's what it's the value we put on it. Mm. Evolution is not plus or minus. Anyway. It happens anyway. Yeah. It's not about that. It's about how much we're allowing ourselves to be pulled in by that and what we attach to that. Now, for me...
Well, one of the things they said was there would have to be a major revolution from the people before they would police it. Right, there would have to be a major revolution before the people, before they would police it. It would have to come from the people.
Mm. Well, see, the thing
is... if they got to people, if you think about it, if they got you tricked and they got you drugged and they got you addicted, are you really going to fucking stand up and say
something? But this is my point. People don't realise. And for me, what I would prefer is that I have... say an autonomy about what happens for me in my life, and that's not dictated to me by anybody, and it's not going to be fully the case, because at the end of the day, when I don't think we can go backwards. We can't go backwards with the technology. No. But what we can do is we can do our very best to teach our kids. We can do our very best to get ourselves out of those addictions. And because, you know, I know people who don't use their phones. Because the phone it sucks the life out of you at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. What I am going to answer because you are calling me and this is the time that you're suitable, that suits you to connect with me. And this is not fine for me. This is not what I'm not going to divert my attention to you just because you say so. Mm. In real life, if people were doing that, like if we imagined it that we were in a room and all these people tried to want our attention at one time, you'd be like, hang on a second, fuck off.
Yeah, but if you're having a conversation with someone and someone comes over and starts talking at you.
That's my point.
And interrupting, going, excuse me, you're going to
exactly. Yeah. You're gonna get pissed off with that. So because you're not, you'll start to get to a point where you realize, hang on a second, this is not my life. I'm living on somebody else's time and somebody else's commands. So one of the things I thought that was really good that they were talking about was the fact that I think it was meant to be a tool. You know, it was meant to be something that we used we gained access to, but it's no longer a tool. A bicycle, and they compared it to a bicycle. A bicycle sits there until you use it, and then it doesn't like ping you every minute, come ride me, come ride me, come ride me. Yeah. So it's like if it can get used as a tool, then I think if we can take that and take that back for ourselves, I think that would be wise. Mm. But in the meantime, we're getting used is what I'm thinking. And then what do I need to do to step out of that for myself? Or what I need to do is, like, I'm very good with the kids, I have to say. When the kids are around, I don't have my phone 99% of the time. There will be times, that's because, Mitch, as well, I don't have kids. I if they were my kids, that would be a totally different story. But because I don't have kids, because I don't have kids, it's easy for me that when I'm with kids, I'm with the kids. Do you know what I mean? But if there's ever a time where let's say I've come to your place and I'm waiting on a phone call, and I know I'm waiting on the phone call, I need to have my phone there. Ollie will look at me and say, "Millie, take your no phone, because he knows what that does." Do you know what I mean? So I think we've got to be really aware of what that does with our kids. And another thing that I thought would be very wise to talk about quickly is just about the fact that we have an assumption that what we're hearing is the truth, you know, because we're hearing one side of it. And they're basically on the other end of that, feeding us information that they know we're going to pay attention to. This is the confirmation bias that we keep receiving, which is what we've been talking about in the last few episodes, you know, in terms of what's happening in the world at the moment anyway. Mm. That there's so much stuff going on. We don't know what the truth is because we're not there, and we're getting fed certain parts of the information. Mm. That doesn't mean that there's not elements of truth in lots of the things that we're seeing, but to take as gospel everything you see is just it's not.
Well, I think the point was that, like, there's no one person behind it. No one is to blame. Mm. The problem is they're out of control with it. The problem is that artificial intelligence, if you look up something, you know, that is, let's say, is conspiracy-ish, what they call conspiracy-ish, the problem is you can't define what is and isn't, what's the truth and what isn't. But AI just keeps sending you more of that stuff. It's no one person sitting back there going, "Oh, this is how you know they've no control over it," because they'll ban this, but there's a trillion other things on there. They'll ban this platform, but there's a trillion other things on there. So you may try to ban this platform. When you see how you know there's a kick up over them trying to ban one person's platform because he's putting out controversial information, right? But the amount of controversial information that's fucking out there is insane. And that shows you how fucking out of control they are with it, that they have no control over it.
Mm.
Because if they were going to ban it, they would have banned all of it. But they can't ban all of it because they're not in control of it. You know what I mean? There's trillions of videos and clips and speakers and talk. The whole thing is like it's beyond, that cloud is beyond comprehension, the amount of data that is there. It's when it's beyond comprehension, it's beyond control. When it's beyond control, it's out of control. And when it's out of control, that's when society starts to head out of control. Because we come into a room, we do it with our staff. We say, "Hey, have you seen this or have you heard of this?" And they're like, "No."
Mm.
And the reason they're like, "No," is because they're getting fed data that is based on what they're clicking.
Yes, does that different make sense? Data than what different we are. Different
data. Nobody's getting all the same data.
Yeah.
So when nobody's getting all the same data, then nobody knows what the truth is anymore. And when we lose the truth in life, and when we lose faith in the truth, in what's right and wrong, you know, it's scary. Mm. We've got to start to take that back a bit.
Well, I think that's a good way to end. Is that we have to, like, what I'd love to do is get somebody who's an expert on this to actually talk about. We'll look into that, to actually pick their brains about what's actually happening. I think that there's a couple of things. Technology isn't good or bad. It just is.
Yeah.
How you perceive it is good or bad.
There's no point witch hunting. There's no point. Yeah. No. Blame. There's no one app that to blame.
Yeah. The other thing is that we have to make, I feel like we have to make a choice about where we want to put our attention.
Yeah.
And at the moment, if you want your attention at the mercy of, a big multi-million dollar, billion dollar company, well, then that's fine. But if you want to live a life that's inspired, then you have to be in charge of where you're putting your attention. It's like what we talk about in terms of our challenges. Mm-hmm. When we are not creating our own challenges, mm-hmm. other challenges will find us. So if we're not, if our attention is not focused and clear, then and it's not on our highest priority, mm-hmm. then we will allow a low priority thing to come in and take away our attention. And that's all that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty of that. You're guilty of that. Mm-hmm. Many people are guilty of that, where we're like, at the moment, I am not in my highest priority of value. Mm-hmm. And so I'll allow myself to be distracted by somebody else's time frame, somebody else's message, mm-hmm. somebody else's tag, somebody else's comment. And when you think about that, it's a bit ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit ridiculous mm-hmm. that somebody tagging or commenting on a post of mine is going to give me like there's some perceived value greater than what I am doing in this moment. Mm-hmm. And we know that our productivity gets reduced the mm-hmm. more our attention gets, you know, trying to get back to the same level of productivity if you get distracted mm-hmm. takes about 11 minutes, I think, doesn't it, to get back to that same level. Yeah. So every time you're distracted, getting back to that level of productivity is very, very difficult. So we're in charge of that. And I think that's it was a big learn. That's a big learning point for me over the, having watched that.
You know, it's like I just think if we can be the foundation of the problem, we can be the foundation of the solution. And the solution is to really start. You know, it's like you said, it's the Coca-Cola thing. Look at, you know, what we want to look at. You know, look and regulate your time and make sure you're doing what you love and what. Get your kids out of the house. Get them out doing stuff. Mm. Get them out playing.
It's okay for them to be bored as well.
Yeah,
biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay for them to be bored.
Your job is not to fucking fill their time. You've got to allow them to do the same thing.
Do that for themselves.
All right. Good convo. Cool. Let's get a coffee.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.